Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Meetings. Ugh. Well, that's most people's reaction to meetings at work, but those are generally to group meetings, many of which are too frequent, contain too many of the wrong people, and aren't well conducted. And that is why Steven Rogelberg began studying meetings and wrote several books about the science of meetings. Rogelberg is an organizational psychologist and chancellor's professor at UNC Charlotte, and now he has focused his pioneering research on a different kind of meeting that might elicit a different response, or perhaps no response at all. One-on-one meetings, and I say no response at all because perhaps you don't consider those to be meetings. They may happen more frequently than group meetings, but they happen in the hallway. They happen in the office. They don't count to many people. Well, they should. But Steven Rogelberg believes effective one-on-ones are critical to your success and the success of the people you manage. So there's an art and science to achieving that, too, and he explains it all in his latest book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings, and he joins us for the hour. We have to stop meeting this way. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Mike.
You are recognized as the world's leading scholar on meetings, and that strikes me as a fairly niche achievement. Not many people look at meetings, I would think. How did this come to be, and what was your specific personal interest in all of it?
As an organizational psychologist, I'm drawn to study topics that are causing great pain at work, but have tremendous potential for good. And meetings fit that bill for sure. So my goal was to do good science and bring evidence to bear so that we could reap the positives without the negatives. And the next stop after studying meetings was around one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. And one-on-ones present such an amazing opportunity. And unlike other meetings, these are meetings that people actually want.
You certainly have struck a nerve with your previous two books, and you, as a result of those books, you've appeared on every television network in this country. You've talked to the major publications. You've appeared all over the world. You've been on the BBC talking about this. Is there any way that you have been able to measure, however, the impact you've had in fixing what you see as wrong with these meetings? Are you having an effect?
I like to hope so, and talking to the various organizations I work with, and you're right, they've been so eclectic, from the UN to Facebook, to Amazon, to Google. And if they level up skills of their leaders around meetings, and they work to address the broader ecosystem around meetings, so starting to change some cultural practices and expectations around meetings, then yes, the early reports have been really positive. You know, people are hungry to solve this problem. And one of the few great things about the pandemic is the fact that people finally started taking interest in meetings. For the longest time, bad meetings were just seen as the cost of doing business.
What has been the impact of that? How have things changed now that a lot of people don't work in the office, they work from home, and a lot of meetings don't take place around conference tables anymore. They take place on Zoom. How have things changed?
During the pandemic, meeting activity really increased. The number of meetings that people were having, it was a dramatic, dramatic change. Interestingly, the length of meetings decreased, but the number increased. So people were spending a lot more time in meetings. Clearly, we were using more virtual modalities. Interestingly, we were getting better at it throughout the pandemic, that evaluations of virtual Zoom-type meetings were better than at the start of the pandemic. Now we're moving more to these hybrid, distributed workforces, and as a result, hybrid meetings are being done more. But sadly, the data on hybrid meetings is not so great. They still enjoy the lowest ratings of effectiveness compared to face-to-face or virtual. And what we generally find is that those individuals attending remote, they're pretty checked out. They do a lot of multitasking, but it's really about the leader. They're just not being drawn in. When you're that sad person or happy person, if you're doing multitasking and things you want to do, who's remote, you just tend to get forgotten. And this could change as conference rooms get redesigned, because that's what they need, right? We need a fundamental shift in how we structure the rooms where meetings take place. But until that, hybrid meetings are definitely struggling.
And of course, hybrid meetings also take place one-on-one, it seems to me. And they always have. Because in before Zoom, you could do it on the phone.
Sure.
So are there any, have the rules for those encounters changed in any way, given the fact that they aren't necessarily face-to-face?
Yeah. The importance of good one-on-ones has really increased. As people don't have casual interactions with key stakeholders at work to the same extent they did pre-pandemic, right? They're searching to feel seen, to feel heard. Let me step back for a moment and define what a one-on-one meeting is, to help clarify how it differs from just a simple conversation. So how one-on-one meetings are defined in the science is this notion of a predictable time where you meet with your manager to share what's on your mind. So it's a meeting facilitated and orchestrated by the manager, but it's not for them. The meeting is for the direct. It's for the direct to share their concerns, obstacles, challenges, and for the manager to constantly say, tell me more. How can I support you? What do you need? So it's a dedicated space for that direct report to truly thrive and engage and build a relationship with the manager.
So let's drill down on that a little bit. So this, I was going to ask you whether these meetings have to take place in the office at a scheduled time, or can they do encounters in the hallway, yeah, or over the in the lunchroom, or the manager walking past the direct, right, report's desk count? Good morning, how are you? How you're doing? Is there anything, right, I can do for you to make the project, yeah, go smoother? Those don't count.
They don't. Those are nice things to do and should be done, because that's just what good relationships are founded on. But this is different. This is a dedicated, purposeful, intentional time where you are communicating to your people that I'm here for you. What often happens is that when employees know they're having these predictable meetings with their manager to address their needs, they actually save their questions and concerns for them. So managers can often experience less interruptions because, again, employees know they have this opportunity.
How often do these really take place? Certainly you have meetings with your boss because they,
yeah,
have concerns, or they want to make sure you understood what happened in the big meeting, or that your project is on track, or whatever it may be. How often are these,
yeah,
meetings scheduled in which the meeting is, as you say, strictly for the employee to say, here's what I need, here are the problems I've been facing, what can we do,
yeah,
or here are my solutions?
Right.
How often does that,
okay,
happen?
So your second part is the twist, because this happens, one-on-ones are happening all the time, but they're not happening properly. We're generally finding in the research that around 50% of one-on-ones are being seen as suboptimal, but they're happening. There's a lot of one-on-ones at work, but leaders are just not doing it aligned with the vision, aligned with the science. And this is not a surprise. When I've interviewed executives from so many of the Fortune 500, I've only found one organization that provides any training to their leaders on how to do one-on-ones. So as a result, leaders just tend to recycle the bad practices they themselves have experienced. So instead of us getting this incredible positives of these one-on-ones, we're just inserting more frustration for so many employees. And there are tremendous positives. Like when these things are done well, the linkage between employee engagement and thriving is high. We see that people stay on the jobs, right? We've heard the old adage that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses. Well, this is your opportunity to prove you're not a bad boss. So employees tend to thrive when they're having good one-on-ones. As employees thrive, teams thrive, right? These one-on-ones help people become more aligned. So the team, the research generally shows that the teams did better as a result of effective one-on-ones. So ultimately, managers benefit from these, right? Because managers are evaluated on the success of their people and teams. So this is an investment that pays dividends.
More of our conversation with organizational psychologist and Chancellor's Professor at UNC Charlotte, Stephen Rogelberg, about his book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings, in just a moment. This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Stephen Rogelberg is with us, the Chancellor's Professor at UNC Charlotte, Organizational and Science Management Professor, and the author of several books on meetings, the latest of which is called Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. We talked about these one-on-one meetings being specifically opportunities for employees to have a face-to-face conversation with their boss on what they need, the support they need, and problems they face, and maybe finding some solutions or suggesting solutions, and not just to meet with the boss because he has things or he or she has things to say to you. This is a listening session in the other direction. And that could be explained why a lot of these employees go to these meetings and find them to be, in your words, suboptimal, because that's not what's going on. And many associated, according to your book, associated feedback with focusing on the past and bringing up failures, which leads to their performance suffering further and to making these one-on-one meetings a dreaded affair. But isn't that kind of feedback needed?
The one-on-one meetings can absolutely get into some tough issues and difficult feedback can be shared. Managers always have the ability to provide feedback to their people. We don't want these things to be dominated with the managers just taking over, right? Saying, what's going on all these projects? I need status updates. And by the way, here's some feedback. You suck. Like, we don't want that. That's not going to be helpful. And so when we think about why these things often don't work, it's because managers are using it to meet their needs and not their direct needs, right? So managers, especially in distributed workforces, right, they want to know what everyone's doing, right? Because they feel somewhat insecure, right? Being a manager with your employees not around you creates some managerial insecurity. So they often just keep using these one-on-ones to be this space saying, you know, give me updates. I want updates. Oh, here's what you should do. And all those things just undermine this opportunity, right? What the science is just advocating is that if you want to have a healthy team, if you want to have good relationships with your people, if you want your people to engage in extra effort on the job, and your best talent not to leave, then you need to find these moments where you change your perspective and you tell your people, my values are about helping people to thrive. You're not just a cog in this wheel. You're part of a team, of an organization. These are my values, and these one-on-ones are an extension of those values. This is my opportunity to be there for you. This is that time. And so, managers, that perspective is critical for making this meeting different than all other meetings, right? So we have lots of different meetings, but this one should look and feel different.
You estimate that workplaces across the world invest around $1.25 billion on these one-on-one meetings. What do you mean by that? I mean, they can't cost so much that $1.25 billion is counted in lost productivity, can they?
I think it's a low-end estimate, by the way. So, you know, we can cost these things out. We have a general sense of how many are taking place. We have a general sense of how long they typically are. We have global estimates of typical salaries, and we can extrapolate and extrapolate, and that's where that number comes from. And, you know, when you think of that number and that 50% are considered suboptimal, clearly the return on investment is not where we'd like it to be. And the reason why I say it's an underestimate is that when these things are done poorly, they actually can serve to disengage people. It can serve to demotivate people, which is another cost. You know, furthermore, there's opportunity costs, right? If it's people could be doing something else during that period of time that could be productive. So yeah, this is an expensive activity, but unlike, you know, when I talk about meetings where I'm like, yeah, we need to go on a principled meeting diet, we do not need a diet around good one-on-ones. This is one of those, this is really the one meeting that should not be an email. And especially in today's environment where work is becoming more and more transactional, right? It's not surprising to see people constantly leaving. They just don't feel connected. They don't feel connected to a team or to an organization. And this is the mechanism for changing.
Well, I was going to ask you why this couldn't be accomplished in an email or a back and forth on Slack or a series of text messages or Microsoft meetings or whatever the heck, whatever platform is available. Why does it have to be in person?
You certainly can connect with people's needs and concerns via email and Slack, et cetera. That's fine. I'm comfortable with that. But typically, that will privilege short-term fires, right? Things that are just on top of mind as opposed to any type of long-term thinking, right? Where would you like to go in your career, for example? That would never come up in just in a quick email. But I'm looking for quality, right? Quality, a quality engagement. Think about the signal you provide if you don't have one-on-ones with your people, right? As leaders, we're always sending signals. If you don't find the time, if you choose not to find the time and you prioritize everything else, the signal is your people don't really matter. You might say that they matter, but when it comes down to it, you're not putting the investment time in. And that's where the problem comes in.
Each of your chapter headings in this new book, Glad We Met, consists of a question. And the first question is, do I really need to do one-on-ones? Clearly, the answer is yes, or there would be no book. But the answer is also coming from an email from Tim, one of our listeners in Waxhaw, who says, I agree with your guest wholeheartedly. One-on-ones are essential. My manager lives in Indiana, but I'm here in Charlotte. Another important tool of a one-on-one is providing the opportunity to manage up and help shape expectations. It's certainly a useful tool when properly used and benefits the team as a whole, which is, I think, something you've already addressed here in several different ways. So talk about that, managing up.
Yeah. You know, so first I just want to say it is a tool, and, you know, a hammer is a horrible tool if you use it wrong, right? If you take a hammer and you try to screw in a nut, you know, or, you know, a screw, it's not going to do well for you. So the tool has to be used right. So I really appreciate the listener's comments. Yeah. I mean, managing up is this, I think in many ways, it's about sense giving to your manager. Right. So your manager observes your behavior and they make certain attributions. And those attributions can be both good or bad. When you're managing up, you're helping to shape the manager's impressions of you and of your actions and inactions. So it's an opportunity for you to help the manager make sense of who you are and how you're behaving at work. So absolutely, these one-on-ones provide this opportunity because now you can provide context, right? So managers often focus on outcomes. You know, they're saying, oh, you're not doing this or you didn't achieve this. But these one-on-ones allow you to share the broader context around these outcomes. And so it is about managing up, but I don't see that as necessarily a bad thing because I see managing up as just providing more information.
You call these one-on-ones critical to the success of employment growth or employee growth and development and establishing trust and in building the foundation of relationships and on how employees experience you, their boss, their job, and the overall organization. Are they more important than group meetings in your mind?
Oh, that's a toughie. Okay. Yes. Yes, they are. They are more important. But that doesn't mean that, well, that good group meetings aren't important. But, you know, meetings in general are being over-applied to a lot of different situations where they're not necessarily needed. But they're still critical, right? A world without meetings is highly problematic. As you and I have talked about in the past, you know, meetings are in many ways organizational democracy, right? They're critical to coordination, consensus decision-making, cooperation, communication. So the goal is not to eliminate meetings overall. It's just to eliminate wasted time in meetings. But one-on-ones are different. Like one-on-ones, they are just foundational. If you are finding that your people are not as engaged as they need to be, and they're leaving you and they're not working well together, it's likely because you're not doing your one-on-ones correctly.
They're also critical, you say, to the they are the job of the manager. These meetings are not add-ons, you say. They are the job of a leader. And I suppose it depends on how many people you manage. I mean, if it's 5 or 10, that's one thing. But if you manage a big division and there are 100 people, you can't possibly have weekly one-on-ones with all these people, can you?
If you have 100 people reporting into you, you're in deep duty. That's a hard situation that's not sustainable. So, you know, most managers would have less than 10. So having one-on-ones is realistic. They can play with cadence. They can do it every week or every other week if they have a lot of directs. And interestingly, the research doesn't suggest kind of a magic time period. And so if you, because your schedule is so stretched, you can only do this for 25 minutes every other week, but it's a really good 25 minutes. I'm good with that.
So what makes for a really good 25 minutes?
So when we think about what makes these things work, right? We think about like the pre-meeting preparation phase. We think about during the meeting and we think about the close. So there's a lot to talk about there. But what really makes for a good one is when an employee's practical and personal needs are addressed. So the practical, tactical needs are really about getting work done. This could be short-term, you know, particular projects or long-term around career changes. The personal is really about the need to feel respected and trusted. So meeting practical needs is like getting a good meal. Meeting personal needs is about the service that you receive. And both are critical to the experience. So when a manager is dialed into this conversation, asking good questions, right? Open-ended questions, you know, tell me about your biggest challenges and obstacles and how can I help and support you, right? So they teeing up these big, broad questions that then employees can run with and shape as they see best, right? And then they're listening actively. They're telling, tell me more. And a couple of things that I'll just say, I know we're going to talk about this more, I'm sure, is one of the keys is they need to talk less than their directs. One of the greatest predictors of ineffectiveness is the manager talking more than the direct, right? Because if they're talking more than the direct, then it's about their needs being met. So they need to talk less. But that's really hard, Mike, because the research shows that talking a lot activates the same parts of the brain as sex and good food. So we talk a lot because it feels good, but we need to give that gift to the employee. So getting the employee to talk more through our probing and exploration is really the key.
So since these meetings are for the manager to listen, we've talked in the past about the need to set an agenda for meetings in general. Who sets the agenda for these one-on-ones in your mind? Is it the direct report or is it the manager, a combination of the two? And as a manager, how do you keep it on track if you didn't set the agenda?
All right. Love it. So first of all, the research found that these meetings do need an agenda of sorts, but it can be very lightweight. It's really just a plan of action. But what mattered more was the direct report, shaping the agenda. That's really the critical piece. So one approach, there's two most common approaches for creating the agendas. Probably the most common is the listening approach, where the manager tells their direct, listen, we're having our one-on-one, come with a list of things that you want to talk about. And that's what we will talk about. However, when the manager asks them to create that list, it's really important that they prime them to think about the job, think about the team, think about the organization, think short-term, think long-term. Think about personal issues that might be affecting work. And because we want the employee to be more broad in what they broach, because otherwise they're just going to give you what you want, right? They're going to assume that you just want updates. So we want to prime them to think differently when creating their list. So that's option one. Another common approach is to identify four or five core questions, kind of like the question I just shared. Employees can have input into those core questions and they can change over time. But these core questions then provide the framework for this conversation.
Stephen Rogelberg is an organizational psychologist and chancellor's professor at UNC Charlotte. He's the author of Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. More of our conversation in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Stephen Rogelberg is one of the world's most highly recognized experts on meetings. He's written several books on how to conduct better meetings in the workplace. His latest is about one-on-one meetings called Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. These tips in this book are all focused on what happens in the workplace between direct reports and their bosses. But you say that many of the principles in this book can also be applied to families. How so?
Yeah, we should be having one-on-ones with our children. Yes. Now, I am not talking about
Would that be two-on-ones, or are these a series of meetings between the mother and son and the father and son, or the mother and daughter and the father and daughter, or can you double-team the kid?
I love that. So I don't think they should be double-teamed. I think they should be one-on-ones, but I think we can rotate the parents periodically. So I am not advocating for rigid calendar holds, right, where you send your kid a calendar invite, you know, for a meeting. But let's stop for a moment. Let's think about the type of communication that we typically have with our children. A lot of it is reprimanding, redirecting. A lot of it is just, what did you do today? Right? It's a lot of status updates. Do we really take the time to sit down with our kids at a predictable cadence and just say, really, how are you? How are things going? What is good for you? What is frustrating for you? What are your challenges? What are you hoping for? You know, depending on how old the kid is, right? This is not for a two-year-old, but for an older kid, like, what are you hoping to do ultimately, right? So helping our kids feel seen is a fabulous thing for parents to do. So taking the principles from this book, right, of having these focused one-on-ones can absolutely be applied to another vulnerable individual in our sphere, right? Another individual with less power than us, which is our children.
And when it comes to these meetings between your family members, between your children, you and your children, where should they ideally take place? Do they take place around the kitchen table? Do they take place in the child's bedroom? Do you summon them to your home office or some private? Where?
Sure. So I'm going to take... You know, what we know from one-on-ones in general with employees is that there isn't a magic location, and that the best practice is to ask the direct, where would they like to have their one-on-one? In general, directs prefer just doing it in the manager's office or a conference room, or taking a walk or at a coffee shop. And because their preferences are all over the place, I would assume your kids' preferences are all over the place. But I want to attach a little joy to this, in particularly for the kid. And so to start building some of that momentum, building some of the trust in the process, let's do our one-on-ones in places that bring joy to them, whether it's a bagel shop, whether it's a coffee shop, where, you know, whether it's going to a park, whether it's taking a walk, right? Let's associate some positive things to it to help build some momentum.
So getting back to the office, I was going to ask you, and you just kind of answered my question, but I was going to ask you where those meetings, these one-on-ones between yeah. your subordinate and you need to take place. And you've just said they don't have to be in the manager's office. They can be at yeah. the lunch counter. They can be at a coffee shop or walking with a cup of coffee yeah. in your hand outside the right. building on the sidewalk. That's all correct.
Yeah, it is. You know, we want these to look and feel different. And so while the data, you know, generally supported that, you know, people were quite happy going to the manager's office, interestingly, the location they least wanted, and this kind of surprised me, was their office, which, you know, I don't know exactly why. Maybe it could be just due to they're in a cubicle and they don't think there'd be privacy. Mm-hmm. But in general, they preferred being in the manager's office or a conference room. Interest in taking a walk or going to a coffee shop was generally bimodal. A lot of people thought this was the greatest option, but then there were some people who just don't want to leave the work location. And so, and then I'll say one thing. The other thing is virtual one-on-ones were not seen as problematic. You know, the key always is the behavior of the leader. So the location is the small pebble. The behavior of the leader in the one-on-ones is the big boulder.
Meaning listening, not talking, or more to it than
exactly that. Right. Those are the key things that we need to be worried about.
And is there, since the manager's not setting the agenda, the employee should be setting the agenda for these meetings. How do you know when it's over? Already said there's no yeah. ideal length of time, but the manager, who is used right. to being in control, is not in control. So how right. do you know when to end okay. it?
And you mentioned that a little bit earlier, and I didn't answer, so I'm glad you brought that up. So the manager is dialed into the total amount of time, right? Because that's an agreed upon contract of sorts. If the employee in going through, let's say their list, is focused on one particular item and they just can't get off of it, your job is not to stop them. Your job is just to tell them, hey, I know you wanted to talk about some other things. I am fine focusing purely on this. It's up to you because this is your meeting. But I wanted to let you know that we only have around 5 minutes left, right? So they could provide some guiding tips, you know, to manage the time. But ultimately, if the employee wants to run on something that's on their minds, let's give them space to do it.
So these meetings are different for employees because, as we've said, the employee should be setting the agenda for this, which means that they have to do a little homework. They have to do a little preparation that they yeah. don't have to do when they're summoned to a team meeting. They have a role to play in these encounters if they want them to be successful. So give me some examples of what I, as a direct report, should be doing to prepare for these meetings.
Love it. So I put in, so I did some research on that, looking at the key behaviors directs should have to make these things work. And I dedicated a chapter to that content because I think it's super important. After all, it takes two to tango. Directs absolutely have a role to make these things work. The greatest weight is on the manager, but still the directs have a role. Just like in our conversation, you have a huge role, but obviously I have a role too. So some of the key things that we need from directs, first and foremost, is that you as an individual cannot get what you need unless you know what you need. You can't get what you need unless you know what you need. So therefore, before that one-on-one, you actually have to give some good thought about what you need from your manager and think through that, prioritize it. What are things that will naturally resolve themselves? What are things that, you know, truly matter to you? Pick your battles. And that is the key piece for a direct. Once they have clarity around that, then they can now have focus during the meeting itself. They can, you know, cue certain content during the meeting itself. So that's a critical piece. Then they need to engage, right? They need to be open-minded. They need to listen. They might need to engage in more rapport building behaviors in the case that their manager is not highly adept at social interaction. So they might actually have to go a little harder on trying to find common interest. And then they have to be able to ask for help, but do it in a way that promotes autonomy. Basically, the research shows that there's two types of help-seeking behaviors. There's autonomous help-seeking and dependent help-seeking. Dependent help-seeking is, hey, fix this problem for me. Autonomous help-seeking is about trying to gather information and insights so you can fix the problem yourself. When an employee engages in autonomous help-seeking, then they're developing new skills, new pathways. Those employees tend to be your most successful employees. So the direct engaging in more autonomous help seeking behaviors are really critical to their success.
You list about 9 or 10 things that the employee mm-hmm. should do to get ready for these meetings, some of which you just talked about. But the last thing on the list, at least in the book, is this: express gratitude. What does that mean? And does that surprise people when they see it or hear it or listen to it?
You know, there's a pretty robust literature on life satisfaction. And some of the greatest predictors of life satisfaction are helping of others. And one-on-ones are our opportunity to help others. And being a grateful individual, right? Looking for opportunities to express gratitude. We can always find them. And if an employee wants to help shape the one-on-one, if they are seeing a manager engage in good facilitation and interest in their needs, they want to reward that. They want to thank the manager. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for this opportunity for me to share. And thank you for truly listening.
You mentioned don't be afraid to ask for help, but be specific about the help you need. You also say, however, to ask for feedback and to receive that feedback well. Is this also an opportunity for the employee to provide feedback to the boss? Or is that something you really should tread lightly on?
Well, you definitely have to tread lightly. And I put a bunch of content in the book around how to do that, because it is tricky, but it can be done. Yes. And there absolutely could be an opportunity for you to provide some feedback to your manager, but that's not the foundation of these things. That really depends on your relationship with the manager and how critical the issue is. If the thing that you want to provide feedback is fundamentally influencing your employee experience, then perhaps it's a good candidate. And so then I outline this process that helps you create a safe way of doing it.
I have about 2 minutes left, and I want to run out of time before we talk about something that I'd never considered, which is in your book, and that is you suggest having what you call skip-level meetings. Those are meetings where the boss above your boss meets with you, eliminating the middleman. That would seem to be scary for the middle manager, because it could have the appearance of his boss spying on him by going to his reports. Talk to me about that.
Sure. So skip level one-on-ones, exactly what you said. It's a meeting with the directs of your directs. There's definitely not as much research on these things. We do know that they happen at an infrequent basis, but that they do happen. They can be very effective at building kind of an attachment to an organization, feeling more part of something bigger than just their individual job. The cadence could be much, much more relaxed than one-on-ones with your directs. It could be every 6 months, you know, once a year. It could just be a 15, 20 minute engagement. But it's just an opportunity for a more senior leader to connect with people who are more on the front lines. This is a really key moment to learn from the boots on the ground. And so these skip levels, they have a similar feel where you're asking their direct, you know, how are things going for them? What are their challenges? You know, maybe you're letting them ask questions about organizational strategy. The whole goal with the skip level is to keep helping employees not feel like they're isolated on some island, that they're part of something bigger, and the senior manager is willing to invest in the directs of their directs but they don't want to undermine the manager.
The last chapter in your book is called I'm Drowning in Meetings. We don't have time to talk about it, so you'll have to buy the book to find out how you add these one-on-ones to your regular meetings and still do your job. Steven Rogelberg, the book is called Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. Thank you for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.